Parshas Vayikra is the first parsha that deals with karbanos sacrifices, and I'd like to start with speaking about a topic regarding sacrifices. It's a little bit tangential, but I'll show you soon where it does appear in the parsha. Now, actually, we have to first turn to Parshas Emor. Parshas Emor. Perk Chaf Beis, Pasuk Yud Ches. This is on page 678. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Leimah, Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Daber al Aaron, speak to Aaron, thou Barav unto his sons, thou Kol Bnei Yisrael, unto all the children of Israel, the Amarta Aleihem, you shall say to them, Ish, Ish mi beis Yisrael, a man, any man from the house of Israel, when I get out of Yisrael, or from the converts amongst Israel, sheyakriv karbanei lechonadrem lechonadvaisam, who will offer his sacrifice for all their vows and all their donations, asheyakriv l'Hashem lo'ayla, they shall offer to God as a burnt offering. Ish, Ish, the Torah says the word Ish twice. And the Gemara in Chulin says, the Gemara in Chulin brings down that from the fact that Torah says the word Ish twice, it's to teach us that not only can a Jew bring a carbon, a Gentile can also bring a carbon. That's the halacha. A Gentile can also bring a carbon. Now, if you go back to our parasha, page 544, Pasuk Beis reads, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, the Amarta Aleim, and say to them, Adam, a man, Ki akriv mikem, who shall offer from amongst you, Karban Hashem, a sacrifice to Hashem, Min Abahema, from animals, Min Abakar, Min Atzayim, from cow, from sheep, Ta akrivas Karbanachem, shall you offer your sacrifice. From the word kiyakriv, when the Torah says kiyakriv mikem, who shall offer from you. So from that word, from you, the Gemara in Chulin derives mikem v'lay kochem, from you. Not all of you. There are certain Jews who cannot bring a carbon. L'hoitzias amumer. That's coming to exclude amumer. Amumer, the art scroll translates as a renegade Jew. Referring to an idol worshiper. If a Jew is an idol worshiper, we know he worships idols, he cannot bring a carbon. But then the Gemara continues, Mikem, from you, Bachem chalakti, from amongst you I have differentiated, meaning from amongst Jews I have said that if the Jew is a mumer, for instance, a idol worshiper, you cannot accept the carbon from him. So Bachem chalakti, from amongst you I have differentiated, but not amongst non-Jews. That means, if a non-Jew is an idol worshiper, brings a carbon, we accept it. But if a Jew brings a carbon, but if a Jew is an idol worshiper and it brings a carbon, we don't. So we have a source that teaches us that a guy can bring a carbon, a Gentile can bring a carbon, and we also have a drasha, and we also have another, we have another halacha that we bring out through this pasuk, that we differentiate amongst Jews that if a Jew is a mumer, like an idol worshiper, we don't accept the carbon from him. But a non-Jew is an idol worshiper, and a non-Jew is not allowed to worship idols also. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Nayach. But the Torah said, but we derive from the words of the Torah, that even if the guy is an idol worshiper, we still accept the carbon from him.
What does accept mean?
That means if he brings the carbon,
we
offer it. If a Jew who's known to be an idol worshiper comes to bring a carbon, we will not accept it.
But isn't an idol worshiper supposed to be killed or something?
Well, let's say he's not. Let's say he wasn't. You can't always kill someone for doing something. Or maybe it's talking about after the time that he wasn't killed, that they didn't have capital punishment anymore. But it's not every time can you kill a person, even if you know they did a sin b'mezid. You know, two people saw him do it, but they never warned him. Okay, so without warning, you can't kill him. But if you see him, he did it. Okay? All right. So with this, I want to take some time to talk about some of the halachas of a non-Jew bringing a carbon, and also then go into a interesting practical question that relates to that. And this,
why is he bringing a carbon, a non-Jew?
Why not?
Well,
he wants to serve Hashem through a carbon.
But he's not Jewish.
So what? He recognizes, he believes in God. He knows this is a place where Jews worship God. He wants to bring a carbon too, and we can accept it from him.
But he's obeyed Kochavim. He doesn't worship God.
He worships God too.
He doesn't want to convert or anything.
Worship? No. He worships God too.
Both.
Yeah. Let's say. Other Kochavim is a word. I mean, you're right. You have the person we're talking about who's the idol worshiper who brings the carbon. But without getting into it, you know, a person can be the idol worshiper and believe God and believe in God. Possible.
Yeah.
Two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Right.
Okay? So, but let's talk about now, let's talk about, again, like I said, the halachas, some of the halachas of a guy bringing a carbon, and then leading into an interesting practical shaila, a very interesting practical shaila. And this comes from an article from Rabbi Yirmiyahu Kaganos of Eretz Yisrael. So, first thing that he brings, interestingly, is that the Beis HaMikdash clearly is called a place of worship even for non-Jews. There's a pasuk we say in Slichas all the time, Ki Beisi Beis Tifilah Yikarei L'chol HaAmim. For my house is called a house of worship for all nations. The guy comes to the Beis HaMikdash, we let him in, he wants to come in, we let him come. As a matter of fact, I think there is actually a special place. There's only so far that a non-Jew can go, but he can come into the Beis HaMikdash, he wants to pray, bring a carbon, we let him do that. And actually, in Malachim Aleph, when the Beis HaMikdash is built, Shlomo HaMelech said a public tefillah, public prayer, and an English translation of it goes like this. And also to the Gentile, who is not from your people Israel, and who comes for the sake of your name from a distant land, when they will hear of your great name, your powerful hand, and your outstretched arm, and come to pray in this house, you will hear from heaven, the place of your abode, and do whatever the Gentile requests of you, so that all the nations of the earth will know your name and fear you. Shlomo HaMelech specifically mentioned how when a guy comes to the Beis HaMikdash and he comes to pray, the Rebbeinu Shlomo, make sure you answer him. So we see that the Beis HaMikdash is a place that a guy can come to also. Okay, now we mentioned that a guy can bring a carbon. The Gemara derives that the only carbon that a guy can bring is a carbon oila, a burnt offering. We now have a carbon oila, which is a sacrifice that's completely burnt. We have a carbon shlamim, where certain parts are burnt, and most of the meat actually goes back to the owner who eats it in Yerushalayim. A guy can bring a carbon oila, he cannot bring a carbon shlamim. So I once heard an explanation to this. And the explanation is that without Torah, it's very difficult to understand that something that you have personal benefit from should be considered part of worshiping Hashem. Meaning, people think, you know, when I give up something completely to God, that's an act of worship. But to say that I take back all the meat, both of the meat for myself, and that's also part of the sacrifice, that's also part of this worship of God, I get the meat, I eat it, it's part of the mitzvah, it's part of the carbon, without Torah, that's a very difficult concept to understand. Torah teaches us that we can take our personal our acts, we can take our gashmis, we can take our personal needs, things that we actually benefit from, and we can elevate them, we can turn them into a mitzvah. But you need Torah for that. Without Torah, it's very hard to accept that idea that I could actually be having personal benefit and it's still considered part of the mitzvah. But that's what Torah tells us. Torah elevates the gashmias. Torah elevates even our personal needs it sanctifies them in name. It can sanctify even our personal benefits. But you need Torah for that. Without Torah, that's something that's very hard to comprehend. And therefore, the only thing that we say a person without Torah can really comprehend is the Ola, where you completely give something to Hashem. We who have Torah, we are taught through Torah, and we're able to understand through living Torah that we could actually take even our personal needs, our personal benefits, and sanctify them to Hashem.
But you can't do it with a chatos or an ashem, where you're actually atoning for something.
There's different karbonos, but the point is, though, that even a chatos, somebody eats from it.
Somebody, but not you.
Okay, but the kohen does. So that means, and you can say the same idea there.
The burnt offering is totally burnt.
Besides for the skin.
But you take the blood and go opposite into the altar and so forth.
That's part of the sprinkling of blood.
But there's nothing left.
There's nothing left. Besides for the skin. The skins go to the kohen. Now, if a kohen in Nasa, a guy comes to the Beis HaMikdash and he brings a carb and he brings the animal. So now, the entire service of the animal, at least from the kohen's part, has to be done like any other carbon. The kohen does, a Jew has to do the shechita, the slaughtering, because typically a guy slaughtering, if a guy does shechita, right, does a perfect shechita, it's not considered shechita. Animal's still not kosher. So when the guy brings his carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, everything, the carbon is processed, so to speak, just like any other carbon. And just like the carbon of a Jew cannot have a mum, cannot have a blemish, and if a kohen were to offer a carbon with a blemish, he'd be transgressing a prohibition by doing so. The carbon of a guy also cannot have a blemish, and if the kohen were to offer the guy's carbon that has a blemish, again, he would transgress the same prohibition of offering, of sacrificing an animal that has a blemish. When a Jew brings a carbon oila, he does something called smicha. Smicha means that he rests his hands on the animal's head and he presses down. And while he does that, he says vidu, he says confession for his sins. The Gemara derives, a Jew does smicha when he brings a carbon, a guy does not. Okay, that's the difference.
But he says what his sin was out loud?
Who, the person who's confessing?
Yeah.
He says that he I don't know.
Privately?
Yeah, I think so. Now, so the point is that a Jew does smicha, a guy does not. Okay. If a Jew consecrates an animal for a sacrifice, so it's prohibited to have benefit from that animal. No one can work it. No one can shear its wool. Once an animal is sanctified for a carbon, you may not derive personal benefit from it. If you do, that is called me'ila. And a person who, at least unintentionally but negligently, derives benefit from a sanctified animal has to bring a carbon called asham me'ilas.
But it happens early enough, like after, so at which point can they sanctify an animal? At any time?
Any time.
Okay. And then after that it's over.
Well, right. So you sanctify the animal for a carbon, you cannot use it anymore. Okay? A guy's carbon, when a guy takes an animal and he sanctifies it for a carbon, he sets aside, this is going to be for my carbon, according to Torah law, that prohibition does not exist. Only midrabanan. Okay, that's another thing. There is something called nesachim. Nesachim means wine libations. Every carbon comes with a wine libation. The halacha is that if a Jew decides just to want to donate, just to offer a wine libation in the Beis HaMikdash, he can do so. A guy cannot. A guy cannot offer a wine libation alone. When he brings his carbon, and then the wine libations to come along with any carbon, he brings. But if he would want to just donate a wine libation, he cannot do that. A Jew can. Okay. Now, here's something going to be a little bit different. It's going to be surprising. A little surprising what we're about to say right now. Now, there's another form of sanctifying or of donating to the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say you want to donate not an animal. You want to donate money. You want to donate an item of value to the Beis HaMikdash. No sacrifice. Just want to donate it to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's called Bedek HaBayis. Bedek HaBayis means the upkeep. You know, what are you donating the materials for? That the Beis HaMikdash is able to use it for something. Okay? So if a person goes ahead and sanctifies an article, he says, okay, I am giving this to the Beis HaMikdash, it becomes sanctified. Again, he may not have personal benefit from it. It doesn't have necessarily the laws of me'ila like an animal, but you're not allowed to benefit from it. If a guy does it, it's the same as a Jew. The animal that he sanctifies does not have a Torah prohibition to use. But an article that he sanctifies is prohibited to use just like a Jew's. That's the just telling you some of the rules that we derive from different psukim. Now, when the Beis HaMikdash was built, it's usher for a Jew to bring a carbon anywhere he wants. That's called Iser Bamos. There's a certain point of time that Jews were able to erect some kind of an altar wherever they were and bring a sacrifice. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built, only the place of the Beis HaMikdash can one bring a carbon. And therefore, if a Jew, even nowadays, were to take an animal and sanctify it for a carbon, become sanctified. If he were to go ahead and slaughter it outside of the Beis HaMikdash area, he will have transgressed a prohibition called Shchutei Chutz, slaughtering a sacrifice outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And if he were to offer it, if he were to build an altar to offer it, he would then transgress another prohibition called Halah B'Chutz, called bringing up a carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That is a Jew. A guy does not have that prohibition. If a guy wants to go ahead and, in his backyard, on a camping trip, he wants to go ahead and bring a sacrifice, he could do so.
So it doesn't make sure that Jews go at least 3 times a year or two?
No, we don't have that mitzvah anymore now.
No.
Now, so the Rambam, let me teach you how the Rambam reads on this halacha. I guess this one doesn't have it. Well, because, all right. Oh, well. Okay, here we go. I did write it down. Hopefully it's all here. Okay, the Rambam says like this. Okay, so we just said that if a guy wants to bring a carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash, he may do so. So the Rambam says, Hashoychet kodshei nachrim b'chutz chayev. If a Jew slaughters a guy's carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash, He's liable for the prohibition of Shchutei Chutz. It's not his carbon. It's the guy's carbon, and the guy can bring the carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash, but you cannot participate in that. You can't do that. Okay? So Chedamarasim B'chutz. Again, let's say you offer, right, the guy's carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now how to do that. Okay. Hanachrim writes the Rambam, non-Jews. Mutarim lahakriv oilos l'shem b'chomokim. They could bring sacrifices wherever they want. The who, on the condition, says the Rambam, Sheakrivu ba'bama sheyivnu. They have to build a bama. They have to build some kind of an altar. You can't just, like, you know, make a bonfire and go ahead and bring it. That they can't do. If they do that, they don't get the mitzvah they do it then. But rather, and maybe, yeah, I don't think it would be a pro... Would that mean if they did it on a bonfire that they would transgress Shchutei Chutz? Could be. But the point is, for them to be able to bring a carbon out to the Beis HaMikdash, and at least, very least, for it to count, they have to build a bummer. They have to build some kind of an altar.
Corbin to Hashem.
Not to Hashem. To Hashem.
When Jew goes to the Beis HaMikdash, he doesn't actually put the carbon on there.
The Kohen does, so.
But he can't, he doesn't do it either, even if he had a bomber, he can't do it when they did it. So then they did it themselves. Yeah.
When they had a bomber, they did it themselves.
With the Beis HaMikdash, then they give it to a Kohen. It becomes
correct.
More Kodesh, but a Kohen does these things.
The only one that can do this service in the Beis HaMikdash is a Kohen.
Yeah.
That's it. Now we're talking about outside, the guy who's doing it, okay? So the guy can build it, the guy can bring the carbon as long as he builds a bama, he builds some kind of altar. The usher, the sayin, the lasay shlichusan. But you can't help. You can't do it for them. You can't participate. Shreinesa aleinu lahakriv b'chutz. We're forbidden to bring a sacrifice outside. Umuta lahayres lahem ulalamdam heich akrivu l'shem hakel yisparach. But you can show them what to do. You can't do it. You can't participate, but you can show them what to do. Which really comes out that even though we said before that when a guy brings a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, a guy can't do the shechita there, even though to slaughter a carbon, you don't need a Kohen. Even a non-Kohen can do the slaughtering of a carbon. It's got to be a Jew. Otherwise, it's not a shechita. It would seem here that when he's offering the carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash and the Jew can't do it, you could teach him what to do as a shechita, and it would count. Okay. Now, when a guy goes ahead and he brings a carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the rules change. Because we said before that if he goes ahead and he brings an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, animal can't have it, the animal can't be blemished. Right? The Torah lists blemishes that invalidate an animal to bring it to be a carbon. If the guy is bringing a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, the carbon has to follow all those halachas. We also know that there are specific animals that can be brought as a sacrifice. Sheep, cattle, of birds, only two types of birds. No chayas, no wild animals. There's nothing but carbon from deer. Okay? When it comes to a guy bringing a carbon on bringing a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash, what he's permitted to do, any kosher animal. You want to take a chicken? Okay? You want to do a deer? Not a problem. On a bummer, outside the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to do it.
It still has to be non-blemished.
Wait a minute. Didn't get there yet. Okay?
If when Jews did it in bummers, could they do other things?
I don't know. It doesn't sound like that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound like that. But the guy can go ahead and bring any kosher animal. It can be blemished.
Whoa.
It just can't be missing a limb.
Missing a limb.
Meaning, there are a lot of blemishes that the animal's not missing any kind of limb. Okay? So it could actually, so that which we consider blemish for the Beis HaMikdash would not be a blemish for bringing outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? But again, it's got to be kosher. It's got to be kosher. It's got to be a kosher animal. Right. So these are some of the interesting halakhas and distinctions between a guy brings a carbon and a yidah brings a carbon.
So, the Gentile can come to the temple and pray.
Yeah.
What happens to the... So when the temple is destroyed, so synagogue and prayer is considered to be some kind of substitute.
Right.
So what happens to the Gentile?
You mean if a guy comes to shul?
Would you let him in to pray at your shul?
Interesting question. I mean, I know you're asking the question in a very interesting way. Like, not even the Beis HaMikdash,
right.
Though.
Yeah,
that's very interesting. Okay. I don't have an answer to that. Okay. Now listen to this. Now listen to a practical question that Rabbi Kaganov cites. Sounds like it was a real question. Okay. And the answer is going to be a very interesting answer. Here's the question, okay? While camping, I met a group of sincere non-Jews who believe in one God and need to discuss how they can live more in His image. While I was with them, they sprinkled some wine and oil on a campfire in commemoration of the biblical sacrifices. Could I have sprinkled with them? Let's see based on what we said. Okay, so again, they went ahead. These are non-Jews, right? And they're sprinkling some wine on the fire as a sacrifice. Okay,
as a sacrifice, or to remember the sacrifice.
Okay, I had the same thing in my mind, but let's assume commemoration means, you know, just as the Jews, just as there were biblical sacrifices, we're doing this. Which means it's a sacrifice itself.
Right.
Okay?
Because there was no animal.
Excuse me?
I thought you said earlier that without an animal there was no alcohol.
Okay. So let's first try to figure out, right, from the non-Jews part, were they bringing any kind of a sacrifice? Okay? So Kaganov brings a different reason than yours. Your reason was a reason that I thought of.
Right.
Meaning, there's no such thing. A guy can't just bring a libation. Okay? Can you think of another reason why in this case they were not fulfilling the mitzvah bringing a carbon? That's another point. That's another interesting point, let's assume. That's another good point. They didn't build an altar. The Rambam says you got to build an altar.
Yeah.
So they didn't build an altar.
But they don't need it.
No. They need an altar.
But it could be out of the temple.
It could be anywhere, but it has to be an altar, the Rambam says.
Are there specific sizes for the altar?
I don't know. Offhand, I don't know. Now, the thing is like this. But let's say the Jew was there and they invited him to participate, right? So could he participate? So what do you think? What do you
probably
think?
Probably because for the Jew it's meaningless. It's just throwing wine at a campfire.
No social mingling with...
I mean, they don't say brachas on.
That's not... That's proper conduct. But right now, first of all, he's there. They seem to be very sincere. They're going to participate. Would there be anything wrong participating?
I thought we can't do it.
What do you mean?
I mean, even if we're alone, we couldn't do it without the guy.
Okay, so you're saying, how can he do it, right?
Yeah.
Because he's offering the wine.
But even the Jew, even if the guy wasn't there, we're not allowed.
So you're saying the point is he wouldn't be able to do it because of the fact that it's outside the Beis HaMikdash. How could he do that? Okay.
Well, what if he doesn't view it as offering? He just says, I'm going to throw some wine in it just because they won't think I'm weird. You know?
Listen, bottom line is, they were doing something, they asked him to participate,
yeah.
Right? So first of all, if that would be considered a sacrifice, you can't just do it and say, oh, I don't mean it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, so Rabbi Kagenov writes that, he says like this, okay? It is good that you did not join them. For a Jew to affect any type of carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash is prohibited. Although because of certain halachic details, this situation would not have involved a severe violation of halacha b'chutz. For some detailed reason, Rabbi Kagenov says, this sprinkling the oil or the wine on the fire, even if a Jew were to do it and he were to do it as an offering, it would not have been the prohibition of bringing a sacrifice outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't explain which detail is missing exactly. Okay? So there's some kind of detail that's missing. So therefore, that actual transgression you don't have. But he still writes, right? He still writes that it's good you didn't join them because for a Jew to affect any type of carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash is prohibited. So I don't know exactly what kind of prohibition he's talking about, you know? If it's not halal b'chutz, because there are details that are missing in that, so what exactly is what he's doing? I mean, is he bringing a carbon? He's not bringing a carbon. So he doesn't really explain. You know, in my mind, first of all, any wine libation, when you offered a wine libation to Beis HaMikdash, what did they do with it? They didn't pour it on the fire. They poured it on the altar. There was a place in the altar where you poured the wine. You didn't pour it on the fire. So therefore, to me, this is just, you know, it's not the way a carbon is brought, okay? At the same time, you know, so now, if that's not, so they weren't doing it like the way carbonists were brought, okay? So is there some other kind of prohibition? Well, okay, if I decide this is how I'm offering a sacrifice to God, is that also somehow or another considered like offering a sacrifice that we would say you can't do outside the Beis HaMikdash? I don't know. It's not clear to me. He doesn't explain exactly what the prohibition is. At the same time, he says, because of details, it's not like offering outside the Beis HaMikdash, but it's still prohibited to affect some kind of a sacrifice to God outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So I don't know exactly how to explain that, and I apologize for, you know, leaving us in a lurch, but I just thought it was an interesting discussion related to everything that we were talking about.
Affect is not the right word, because as you told us, he could have told them how to do it properly.
Yeah, but he did it. We're talking about, there's two things. The question was, could the Jew have participated?
Right, but at the end he said he shouldn't have attacked them.
Okay, that's why he shouldn't participate.
Right.
Now, again, if there would have been something for him to teach them, it would be a different story. Okay. But again, there was no Bizbeach there, so there was nothing to teach them. But they didn't have one there.
But they allowed non-Jews for reason for the temple, more for...
Reason?
Yeah, I mean, the people...
Reason. The non-Jew wants to come to the Beis HaMikdash.
But wasn't it for reason to show that if a Jew would say to them, well, you can't come,
no.
That would be a problem?
No, not because of that. The Torah says a guy can bring a carbon, finished. That's it. He can bring a carbon like a Jew. If he's bringing a carbon to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he can be like a Jew. Finished. Not because it's not going to look nice, and not because of whatever. This is not a rabbinic allowance. This is a Torah law. He can bring a carbon.
So, but he could have said, okay, if he knew how, let's build some kind of a pedestal and let's do it the right way and have them do it. That's
theoretically. Theoretically. Okay. I now want to share with you a thought from the Aruch Chaim, a thought that he's explaining a medrash in this week's parasha, and in it he actually gives us a very, very interesting insight into one of the aspects of the sin of Adam HaRishon when he ate from the tree of knowledge. So the Aruch Chaim, the Aruch Chaim brings a medrash like this. Pasuk Beis that we just read before says, "Da'abel b'nei Yisrael ve'amarto aleihem," speak to the children of Israel and say to them, "Adam ki yakov mikem," a man that will offer from you. The Torah uses the word Adam, not Ish, but Adam. So the Medrash Tanchuma says like this: "Ki yechta ha'adam ka'adam harishin shehiska lachtai." If a person sins, like the first man who is the first to sin, Yavi Karban, he should bring a sacrifice. So the reason why the Torah uses the word Adam is to allude to Adam HaRishon. And if you are like Adam HaRishon, that you sin like Adam HaRishon who was the first one to sin, bring a Karban. That's the Medrash says. What's the point here? What's the point? So the Aruch Chaim explains it like this. The Aruch Chaim says that if the Medrash says that if you sin like Adam HaRishon, you should bring a carbon, that would imply that Adam HaRishon's sin was the status of shogig, of unintentional. Because the only carbon that you, the only, typically, when you, if you want to bring a carbon for a sin, typically an intentional sin you don't bring a carbon for. There are certain intentional things that, sins that you do. But if you intentionally worship idols, no carbon. If you intentionally eat something not kosher, you intentionally desecrate Shabbos, there's no carbon for that.
What's an ashram
for? Ashram is for certain specific cases. Certain Shabbos are for, some of them are intentional, some of them are unintentional. Okay, so there are certain cases where they are intentional. But if the Medrash is saying that if you sin like Adam HaRishon, bring a carbon, okay, so that means to say that, well, if I sin like Adam HaRishon, if I sin like the first man, I'll bring a carbon. If I'm comparing my sin to his sin, and we're saying that if I sin like him, I should bring a carbon, that has to meet, so again, that has to, so what kind of sin could I be doing that's comparable to the sin of Adam HaRishon that we say bring a carbon? Now Adam HaRishon didn't make a carbon for his sin. But we're saying if you sin like Adam HaRishon, bring a carbon. Okay? So now, what sin would I be doing that's similar to Adam HaRishon's sin that we could say bring a carbon for it? So you'd have to look at Adam HaRishon's sin of eating from the tree of knowledge and say to yourself, okay, what kind of a sin did he transgress that it would have been possible to bring a carbon for? And my understanding here is that whatever intentional sins are for being carbonous, it wouldn't fit there. It wouldn't fit there.
But
Adam HaRishon's sin, maybe consider like eating not kosher. Maybe it's like, or consider it idol worship and the fact that he's defying Hashem. But whatever kind of way you're going to define Adam HaRishon's sin, right, to compare a sin that we would do to his to say bring a carbon would only make sense for a type of a sin that when you do it unintentionally, you bring a carbon. Because intentionally you don't.
Well, but it means that this defines Adam's sin as non-intentional.
Correct.
Which is a big deal.
Correct. That's what the Aruch Chaim is. Wait a second. That's what the Aruch Chaim is saying. That would be the implication of this medrash. The implication of this medrash is because, again, there are certain things, like Barry points out, there are certain things that bring a carbon. But I think the point of the Aruch Chaim is that those sins, right, just don't fit into what Adam and Rishon did to say that, yeah, the carbon there would have been for intentional. So the Aruch Chaim therefore says, if you look back at what I write in Parashas Bereishis, the Aruch Chaim says, Adam HaRishon's sin, he was at most a shodig. Now, how does that, how are we trying to say that? So, you got to open up Parashas, we have to open up Parashas Bereishis, the Aruch Chaim's explanation. And he is going on, after Adam and Chava eat from the tree of knowledge. So, Vayomer Hashem Elokim, I'm sorry, Vayomer Hashem says to Adam Arishin, did you eat from the tree that I told you not to? Vayomer HaAdam, so the man responded, Ha'ish Hashem Asati Madi, the woman that you gave me, Hina Salim and Ha'eth Va'eichal, she ate from the tree and I ate. So all the commentaries like, what the Mishnah says to Baruch Shalom, the woman that you gave me, she made me eat. The Aruch Chaim says, you know, you don't talk like that. You don't talk like that. We're not going to assume other Marisha was just talking to the Rabbeinu Shalom, like, you know, she, you know, you, it's your fault. You gave it a woman and she messed me up. The Aruch Chaim says that's not what other Marisha is saying. So what is other Marisha saying? Other Marisha is saying like this. You know, when your wife serves you supper at night, do you have to ask her if it's kosher? You don't have to ask your wife if it's kosher, right? You're allowed to believe your wife that she's serving you kosher. So other Rishon says to the Rabbeinu Shalom, the woman that you gave me this woman to be my aid, right? She's a great woman, she's a righteous woman. I'm supposed to wonder if there's something wrong with it? That's what he was saying.
So he's saying I didn't know that it came from that tree.
Yeah, it came from that tree. And at the end of the day, it was from that tree. But I have to go ahead and suspect that she gave me from the tree of a tree?
Yeah.
I don't have to suspect that. That's what Adam Rishon was saying back to the Rabbeinu Shalom, current Aruch Chaim. Okay? And that's unintentional. So Aruch Chaim says that maybe it's even more than unintentional. Maybe it's called ones. Ones means it's beyond my control. I'm not responsible to go ahead and question her to say is this permissible or not? That's what Adrisha was saying. Ha'isha shenasata imadi was the woman that you gave me. You know, maybe but the woman that you gave me, this great righteous woman who you gave me to be my Ezer, to be my help, to be my support, right? She gave it to me and I ate.
What's the difference? Unintentional, beyond my control.
Beyond your control. Unintentional means that there is a certain negligence on your part.
Okay.
Unintentional means, of course, I didn't mean to do it. Okay. Should have been more careful.
Right.
Should have been more careful. Sorry.
If you go back and brace it,
does
she sort of tell
him
where the apple comes from? Doesn't she say
it's
from the tree?
No.
No.
Nope. Just says she gave it to him. She ate from the tree, and then says she gave it to him. So, you know, you get a very good point. You know, when you read it, you'd say, well, he knew it was. So does Aruch Chaim know? Maybe he didn't know. You know, he was busy, you know, learning Gemara, and she brought him this apple, and he's supposed to ask her? Okay. All right, but what is Adam Rishon held responsible for? You know, what did he do wrong? What did he do wrong?
Yes,
so says the Aruch Chaim, that we'd have to say like this. Now the Aruch Chaim has another very interesting approach here, which I didn't go into all the detail, but you know, the Nachash speaks to Chava, right? He gets her to touch it, right? And you see, hey, touch it, nothing is wrong. He gets her to eat it. So the Aruch Chaim says that when the Nachash approached Chava about eating from the tree of knowledge, she said that we are not allowed to eat from the fruit of the tree. Who told her that? How'd she know? Adam told her that. And the Aruch Chaim says that those words, where Adam Rishon says to her, it's the fruit that's usher, actually opened up the possibility for the Nachash to get her. Because the way and it's very interesting, the Aruch Chaim, what he said. I'll just tell you very quickly what he says. Okay, I didn't go through it that well. But he does say that the first thing the Nachash got Chava to do was to eat from the tree itself. The Medrash says that in Gan Eden, the tree and the food had the same taste. So the first thing that he got her to do was to eat from the tree. And once she ate from the tree, she eventually ate from the food. Now, I didn't see that. So and he says, and so, and where did this mistake start from? Where did she think that she could eat from the tree? Because she said, we can't eat from the fruit. The assumption is that that's what Adam Arishan said. So says the Rechayim, Adam Arishan was not careful enough in the way that he told her what was forbidden. Because by saying you can't eat from the fruit, that's what led to this possibility of eating from the tree itself, then eventually eating from the fruit. So therefore the responsibility of Adam Arishan, says the Rechayim, is the way that he gave over the prohibition to Chava. That is where that's what he's held responsible for. That was where he was not careful enough.
He should have said, you cannot eat from the tree.
Basically. Yeah. So that, right, don't eat from the tree. Okay?
So that's why he was shogeg.
Therefore, at the end of the day, there is some responsibility on his part, and he's called shogeg. Okay. So, says the Rechayim, back in our parsha, that what the Medrash is teaching us, Medrash Shulchan is teaching us when it says, if you sin like Adam Harishan, bring a carbon, the Medrash is saying that, you know, Adam Harishan didn't have a chance to bring a carbon for his sin. You do. You do. Even if you sin like Adam Harishan and he didn't get a carbon, you have a carbon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does us that kindness and gives us a carbon. Now, why didn't he get a carbon? Why didn't he? Says our Chaim, that's what lies in the words of the Medrash when it says, if you sin like Adam Arishan, Shehischelachtai, who started sinning. You know why he didn't have a chance to bring a carbon? Because he was the first one to sin. And on that, the Rechayim says, what's the point of that? He says like this. You know, all the commentaries struggle to understand. Adam and Chava were created good. There was no bad to them. So how did they sin? So the approach that's basically used is the Nachash represented evil, but evil existed outside the person. Male was essentially good, and evil was outside the person to somehow or another convince him to go against Hashem's word, which eventually the Nachash succeeded in doing. But at that point, Adam and Chava are essentially good. There is no evil within them. There's no potential of evil in them. There's no Yetzer Hara in them. There's no evil inclination in them. But once Adam and Eve ate from the Eitz Hadaat from the tree of knowledge, that is when mankind now received a Yetzer Hara. That's when now mankind developed or was given an evil inclination, where evil is part of the nature of a human being. And that evil now actually pushes a person to sin. It's much harder not to sin when you've got that evil as part of you. And that evil that's part of you now, first of all, tries to get you intentionally to sin. And if he doesn't get you intentionally, he tries to get you when you're not on guard to unintentionally sin. But because of the fact that you have this very strong challenge of sinning, Hashem says, intentional, you can bring a carbon.
Unintentional,
right? 1 second. Unintentional. But Adam Arishan, his sin may have been at the level of unintentional, but he didn't have that same challenge everybody else has. He was essentially good. And therefore, when he basically transgressed that good, when he still allowed himself to sin, for him that unintentional sin was so grave, he can't get a carbon for it.
Well, he did edit the word fruit.
But you see what that led to. You see what that led to. The essential good of Adam Arishan should have dictated that he would have been completely careful, because he knows there's a nachash. It's not like there's no possibility, right? The Rebbeinu Shlomo put a tree of knowledge into Gan Eden to be a challenge to Adam. That was the one challenge. And if he would have made it through that one challenge in that first day of creation, the world would be a completely different place. So he knows there's a challenge, and therefore he has to live up to the challenge. And because he was essentially good, when he didn't live up to the challenge, that was considered his shogeg, his unintentional, was a great enough transgression that a carbon would have worked for it.
So when did he bring a carbon? When did he bring a carbon? I mean, he was the first one supposedly to bring a carbon on Harabayas.
Yeah.